The condition is called misophonia. It describes the extreme emotions, the unavoidable reaction when you hear certain repetitive noises being produced by other people. People with this condition experience annoyance or even anger at the smacking of lips or perhaps chewing, tapping, humming. We're talking about misophonia here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Jennifer Jo Brout is a New York State certified school psychologist and a licensed counselor. She's been at the forefront of misophonia research. She established a program at Duke University a decade ago, and she's involved in studies at New York University and the Star Institute for Sensory Processing Disorder through the International Misophonia Research Network. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, what sparked your interest in studying misophonia and its impact on people?
Well, my interest began long before misophonia had its official name, when I noticed these symptoms in one of my children. I have 23-year-old triplets at the time.
Goodness.
My daughter was two, and she started to display the symptoms of what we're now calling misophonia, at which point I kind of put it together that I also had it. And at the time I was in graduate school for psychology, so I was able to start studying the processes that caused the problem.
What would be considered clinically relevant or clinically diagnosed misophonia?
Well, right now, because it's not in the DSM, you know, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that's published by the American Psychiatric Association and the ICD-10, which is the International Classification of Diseases, there's no way to officially diagnose anyone. So most people are either self-diagnosed or they've been diagnosed by an audiologist and sometimes a psychologist.
And what would an audiologist or a psychologist be looking for?
There's no way to do any kind of auditory test or really test in any way psychologically either. So what we have to use are mainly self-reports and scales. And those scales that we have right now are really in the very beginning stages of development. So we don't have a lot to go by. However, remarkably, the symptoms and the actual sounds themselves they cluster together so much across different people from different places that it's quite astounding.
So what are some of the signs and some of the symptoms?
Well, it depends also what age someone is. I think, you know, there seems to be a myth out there that it starts in either the tween or teen years. And I don't think that's true. I think I certainly have seen many children who have it. And when you see it in a child, you really see it in a much more direct or sort of raw state, if you will. And you can actually see that when the sound, whatever the sound might be, occurs, you can actually watch a child's nervous system behaviorally speed up very quickly and for them to become often either explosive or shut down. Often they'll cry. So you really see the direct stimuli to response with kids. With, you know, older children, adolescents, and adults, it becomes more complicated because there's more personality development that changes the reaction. There is, you know, person could have a coexisting disorder. And so it gets a little messier when you're looking at it in older people, but it's still pretty astoundingly similar in that the auditory stimuli, the sound, hits the part of the brain that is responsible and mediates fight flight. And so within really less than a millisecond, a person actually goes into the fight-flight response, or at least something close to that.
Let's bring in a call here. Betsy is joining us from Fitchburg. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. Thank you so much for talking about this subject.
Sure. Go ahead.
I'm an occupational therapist, and I've specialized in sensory processing disorder, but my child has misophonia, and misophonia blows sensory processing disorder out of the water. It is so impactful in daily life. My child is highly intelligent, blows any standardized tests off the record, and loves to learn, but is struggling in school because kids eat in class all the time.
Yeah. Mm. You know, it's so... Am I answering?
Yeah, go ahead, Jennifer.
It's so interesting that you're an occupational... This is such a great subject to bring up, because when my daughter... How old is your daughter, if I might ask?
18.
Okay. So my daughter is now 23. So when I first started looking at this and started to think about it, I thought of it as a sensory processing disorder, which in a larger sense, it may be. But we were calling it, and you might have been doing the same thing, auditory over responsivity.
Right.
But the symptoms that I had and that my daughter had were clearly so much more severe, or at least this is the way that we looked at it, in the auditory realm, that we knew that the auditory sensory integration work didn't really help, but it helped in terms of learning to use your sensory systems to self-regulate. So I agree with you that this is a different animal, but I do think, and you'll appreciate this as an OT, that OTs can be very, very helpful in terms of the self-regulation component.
Betsy, how has your daughter been coping with this, and how have you tried to help?
We've had to totally change our way of life. For the most part, she's not been able to sit down to eat a meal with the family for years. Things are slowly improving. I mean, we've done a lot of research, and she's been getting some help just in learning how to calm herself, regulate herself as best she can. There is some progress. Just recently, she's been able to go to a movie that hasn't happened in years because people chewing popcorn. I'm so glad you're talking about this, because we went to one psychologist one time and explained this whole situation, and at the end of it, we were at the front desk, and he starts to pull out a potato chip. And my child looks at me, he goes, and says, "Really? After everything we just talked about?" And I think he just didn't believe her or whatever and said, "What, this?" And chomped on the chip right in front of her.
Oh, goodness.
And she disappeared. She flew. It was just the anxiety of that. She was gone for 45 minutes. And I think he knows what misophonia is now.
Betsy, thank you so much for the call. Jennifer, can you give us some examples of sounds that are commonly known to cause people to have a fight or flight reaction?
Chewing, for whatever reason, seems to be the number one. Now, that's by self-report. So is that because you encounter it more, and then your nervous system response pairs in memory with the sound, or is it because chewing really is the worst? Nobody really knows. But I would say chewing, slurping, and then I'm going to go to some non-people noises, like if you were clicking a pen, tapping on a keyboard, crunching, breathing, or loud breathing, throat clearing, sniffling, repetitive sneezing, and then there are also a lot of reports of things like when you have the turn signal on and it's just repeating over and over. So I think, you know, there's an emphasis on noises that are emanated from people, but there could be, you know, other reasons that those seem worse or more salient to people. And, you know, they may be more salient. But the non-organic sounds seem to be just as disturbing. People just don't report them as much. But when you ask them, they go, oh, yeah, you know.
Jennifer Jo Brout is with us, and we're talking about misophonia this hour of the morning show. She's a school psychologist and a counselor and does research on misophonia. You can join the conversation. What sounds make you cringe? How does your hate for certain sounds make you feel? Do you think you have misophonia? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Jennifer, can you help us draw some sort of delineation here? I mean, a number of people might say, yeah, I hear irritating sounds. But when does it become much more critical that the body is doing something that is really unhealthy versus just something that would really, really irritate you?
I think the difference is if you think about, you know, if you hear, like, let's say, fingers on a chalkboard, it makes you, like you said, cringe. And, you know, it almost feels like, oh, that hurt my ears. Ooh, you know, it's a terrible feeling. This is different. This is the sound is putting you in your neurophysiological. What happens is the auditory stimuli within milliseconds hits the amygdala. And if you think about it this way, it's like, as though, I guess this is a good way to explain it, it's as though your brain is misinterpreting that stimuli as toxic or dangerous or harmful. So you react 0 to 60 within a millisecond into fight flight, and literally, you know, your cortisol, which is your stress hormone, is released, adrenaline is released, blood flows to different areas of your body to enable fighting or fleeing. So, you know, there is just a split second physiological response, and then the emotions that get attached to that response can vary from person to person and can vary from situation to situation. But certainly when you feel that pumped up in terms of your nervous system, you often associate that with anger and rage because you feel out of control. Mm. And a lot of people will say, if I can get away from the sound, I'm okay. If not, you know, you're in fight flight. And it literally is, you know, either stay around the sound and your nervous system keeps escalating, or you flee and get away from it, and then within seconds, most people, I mean, not everybody, but most people then feel physiologically at homeostasis again.
Let's bring in Kelly now from Whitewater. Hi, Kelly, go ahead.
Hi. I like to hum, you know, just all the time, but I get really irritated when another person hums. Is that the same thing?
I'd be happy to address that. That is not unusual. There are some people who are bothered by their own sounds, but for the most part, and again, this is anecdotal, it hasn't been studied that much, but for the most part, the sounds that you produce don't give you the same reactivity. And there's a few reasons for that, and again, I'm somewhat speculating, but the first reason is the sounds you produced are processed differently in your brain. So they're not the same as a sound coming at you from the outside environment. Secondly, you're not surprised by it, and you have control over it, so that reduces the anxiety that naturally comes around this response. And it's confusing to people because a lot of parents will say to me, well, you know, my child is fine with her own chewing, but why not ours? Mm. But it's a completely different processing within the brain and the body.
Kelly, thanks so much for the call. People who suffer from misophonia may be bothered by the sounds of other people chewing or swallowing, but it goes well beyond a pet peeve. The reaction could do a number on your ability to focus, to carry out daily tasks. We're talking about misophonia on the morning show. School psychologist and counselor Jennifer Jo Brout stays with us. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How does your hate for certain sounds make you feel? Do you think you have misophonia? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Are there trigger sounds in your world? Some people have clinically severe misophonia, which can be quite disruptive to a person's quality of life. It could be the sound of people chewing, coughing, clicking pens, or rustling papers. And the neurological response may be so severe that it requires clinical intervention. We're talking about misophonia here on The Morning Show. School psychologist and counselor Jennifer Jo Brout researches this condition. She established a research program at Duke University a decade ago, continues to work on studies through the International Misophonia Research Network. Getting your questions, your stories, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Are there certain trigger sounds for you? How does it impact you in your life? How do you avoid these sounds? What workarounds do you use? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Jennifer, what are researchers trying to understand now about misophonia, and what breakthroughs have they had?
Okay, so the research is going in two directions, maybe three. One is neuroscience, which is obviously an excellent direction. There was a study last year by Dr. Sukhbinder Kumar, who is at Newcastle in London, that demonstrated that there are brain differences, and it has to do with the connectivity in the brain, which is actually the original theory of Drs. Jastreboff and Jastreboff, who coined the disorder. And you know, at this point, because it's a very underfunded disorder, the research is very sparse. So that's one area of research, and that's an excellent area of research, because if you can find the underlying mechanisms, you can figure out how to treat it. The other area, which is coming more out of psychiatry, has been to compare this disorder with obsessive-compulsive disorder, or what is now labeled as obsessive-compulsive and related disorders. And it seems, but again, this hasn't been studied, it seems there is a high rate of co-occurrence, but it is not the same disorder. Yet there is a line of research trying to sort of encompass this as obsessive-compulsive disorder. And that gets very difficult, because then you sort of end up with the wrong treatment. So those are really the two lines of research. But there's very, very little research going on, to tell you the truth, unfortunately.
Let's bring in Larry now, joining us from Milwaukee. Go ahead, Larry.
Good morning. This topic is brilliant. I'm listening to you, and I have, at 62 years old, retired, I have never heard of this misophonia as a disorder. And I admit, I suffer from it. I'm easily bothered and irritated by other people who chew, smack, talk while eating. And it's bothersome to the point that it can disrupt my whole day in terms of thought if I deem it to be that serious. And so this has been a problem pretty much all my life, but it's, as I've gotten older, I give it more attention.
Larry, what workarounds, what have you done to try to keep it at bay and to try to make sure that your whole day and your life isn't disrupted by it?
Well, deep breath, moment of prayer, moment of reflection. I keep it in. Most times I don't say anything, but it goes a little bit further than that. People who cough and sneeze because I take public transportation. People who cough and sneeze openly is also a big bother. And I may say something that, you know, those germs that you just let out aren't just going to fall to the ground. They're going to travel and affect everybody. And that's an absolute truth because I was hit with, I can't remember this disease that I got that was transferred from someone.
So
I end up having to take medication for 6 months.
So the sounds of like a sneeze can even trigger that. Jennifer, can you respond to that?
Absolutely. I think there are potentially three issues, and it speaks to what I was just talking about. There is the issue where the sound itself, just causes the fight-flight reaction. There's also, in terms of sneezing and coughing, a fear, and it's a, you know, you could call it an irrational fear, but it's not irrational because certainly nobody wants anyone's germs, but and nobody wants to get sick. So, but that, to me, is not misophonia. If it's germs that you're concerned about, that's either, you know, a logical assumption one makes when somebody's sneezing on them, or, you know, that's a specific issue with that. Or it could be both. But just to be clear, misophonia is about the sounds themselves causing a direct nervous system reaction.
Larry, thanks for the call. Let's go to Tyler now, joining us from Waukesha. Hi, Tyler.
How's it going, ladies? Good morning.
Good morning.
So I've had this since I was about 12, but it's a weird thing. Whenever someone uses, like, silverware and either scrapes against a plate or scrapes against other silverware, so, like, you know, if you're using a fork and your knife scrapes up against it, and it creates kind of like a metallic ting or metallic ring sound, I instantly get a shiver down my spine the entire time you're doing it, and then I get, like, a metallic taste in my mouth. It usually happens more forks than it does, like, spoons or anything like that, but any type of, like, metallic scraping or anything like that, for some odd reason, I just get that weird metallic taste, and it's hard to get that out of my mouth. And then, like I said, uncontrollable, like a shiver up my spine until that sound is done.
So, Tyler, the taste lingers in your mouth, but when the sound is over, are you able to recover from it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty much instantaneous thing where as soon as it's done, like, the shivering up my spine kind of stops, and like, the metallic taste, you know, kind of stays around for about a minute or so. But after that, it kind of just goes away. But it's just something that's been happening to me since I've been, like, 12, I've noticed.
Tyler, thank you so much. Jennifer, so the sound of that fork and, you know, scraping metal, it almost seems to me, too, like as if nails on a chalkboard reaction. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, as he was saying that, I started to actually, like, get that shiver feeling just thinking about it. I think often, I mean, I don't know if this gentleman has other sounds that bother him. However, I would say if he doesn't, that particular sound, you can certainly have aversion to that sound and not have misophonia if that's your only sound, because that's a sound that bothers a lot of people. The interesting thing about what he said is that it brings up the taste of metal, which is a whole other issue, and an issue that, you know, would take a lot of time to explore.
Tyler, thank you so much for the call. One listener emailed and says, is it known if this condition is hereditary? She said, or he said, I'm not sure here, my mom seemed to have it. Eating sounds were especially problematic. I'm sensitive to noises, but nothing is bad. My daughter has this. You absolutely can't eat chips or sunflower seeds around her. Clear your throat, sniffle, or empty the dishwasher. Amazingly, she is an elementary school teacher. I don't know how, but she must be able to turn it off. So, and this is from Laura. What are your thoughts on that, Jennifer?
Well, I think it, just anecdotally speaking, it certainly can be hereditary. I mean, it seems to run in families. However, there are also cases of it where it doesn't seem to be hereditary. But, you know, again, there hasn't been a lot of research based on that. But my guess is that you would find both. As for her daughter, I think it was being a teacher,
mm-hmm.
she's not turning it off. What happens is that, you know, and Stuart Shanker, who is a wonderful doctor from Canada, always says there's a difference between self-regulation and self-control. Now, if you control yourself all day, that doesn't mean that your nervous system is not responding. And what is probably happening is that her daughter is probably coming home exhausted and depleted, or she may have some, you know, nervous, you know, I mean, for lack of a better term, a nervous habit that she does all day. Like a lot of kids, you'll see they will chew their sleeves, they'll bite their nails. I used to bite my nails. You know, so there, it doesn't, when you have that kind of high energy, particularly high negative energy in your body, it has to escape somehow or it will shut you down, you know, so you do see a lot. So I don't think she's turning it off. You can't turn it off and turn it on.
Let's bring in Sue now, joining us from Cloquet, Minnesota. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have to laugh because as far as the fight or flight response, I'm definitely more in the fight category. I'm just amazed. All of the sounds that you've been describing affect me and, I mean, can just literally drive me into a rage. And I do have the self-control to not act out inappropriately in public, but in particular, the chewing sounds, you know, I sometimes passively aggressively will get out my own gum and start chewing it really loudly next to the person who's doing it, you know. The one thing that nobody's brought up yet, and this goes to a larger social issue that's going on right now, is breastfeeding. So many people want to claim that folks who are against breastfeeding are against it because of exposing the breast. I have no problem with women exposing their breasts to feed their baby. What I cannot stand is to be around them while they're feeding it, the baby, because of the noise that the baby is making.
Sue, thank you so much for bringing up this aspect. Jennifer, what are your insights there about nursing in public and the sound of feeding?
Well, I mean, I think nursing in public is certainly its own issue. And, you know, as for that particular scenario versus somebody simply eating their own food, I don't see a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The sound is the sound. Look, there's a level of noise pollution that we certainly live with, particularly in cities or when we go into a store, there's always loud music on, everyone's screaming. You know, we live in a very noisy society. But again, these can be sounds that are sort of, you know, quiet, pattern-based or repetitive, as well as loud sounds. But, you know, I think what I'm trying to say is that there's a certain level of just noise in general that I think is sort of gone overboard in our society. But at the same time, we who have misophonia can't expect people to not eat or breathe. It's not logical. So coping really is a balance of self-management and not particularly self-control, but more self-regulation or knowing certain places not to go, and you know, I would just simply not go to the restaurant where the people are breastfeeding if it was bothering me.
How has misophonia impacted relationships, and more personally, your relationships?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I think what I see clinically, it can have a terrible impact on relationships, both family, sibling, couples. However, I think with education, both in terms of the person who has misophonia as well as their either, you know, their family or their spouse or their significant other, it can be worked out. It's when people begin to take it personally or personalize it towards someone else. So when I work with people, I always say it's the sound, it's not the person. But in memory, the person does get merged with the sound. And you have to kind of unpack a reaction that feels simultaneous into its component parts and think of it for what it is. This is my body reacting to that auditory stimuli. So you don't hate your husband. And then you need some understanding on the other end. Like, you know, that's driving me nuts. Like, you know, for me, it's throat clearing. And so I'll say to my spouse, you know, okay, like that's, you know, and I, you know, I usually am able to stay very calm because I've trained myself. And then I can say, okay, like clear, like just clear it out and let's be done with it. And, you know, we can have a laugh about it. And, you know, sometimes it's not, you know, that great. Sometimes it is hurtful or annoying to him. But it by no means has to ruin a relationship any more than anything else does.
Let's bring in Tom now, joining us from Ripon. Hi, Tom.
Hello. My thing is a couple of years ago, I got hearing aids that improved my hearing dramatically. That allows me to hear things that I wasn't hearing a lot before. I think one of the things that bothers me is when people are texting using their cell phones and they have their touch click on. I hear that quite a lot, and I don't think people realize they can turn that off on their phones. It becomes very irritating. I know a lot of these things that you're talking about are things that are triggers for me, and I try to exhibit a lot of self-control over these without having a violent response to these. Most of the things I do is just try to go away from the bothersome sounds and into a quiet area and regain my control.
Which is a coping strategy.
Yeah, very fascinating, Tom. Thanks for bringing this this point into the conversation. Jennifer, go ahead.
I it's funny, the clicking of the phone. You know, my own daughter took my phone, just very, you know, quietly took my phone, turned off the clicking. And I was like clicking the key, like going, and I need, the clicking doesn't bother me from the phone. And I kind of need it in order to text to keep me sort of in the right rhythm. And all of a sudden my phone wasn't clicking anymore. I'm like, what's going on here? And so I said, and then she told me, she's like, I turned it off. And, you know, so that's absolutely the kind of trigger sound that many people don't notice because it's not, you know, a body-based sound or, you know, chewing. But, yes, it is a very, it can certainly be a very disturbing sound for people, absolutely.
Well, and Tom brought up hearing aids. That can also contribute so much to hearing noise pollution.
Yes, and, I mean, hearing aids, you know, this is an interesting subject, too, and probably certainly an audiologist would be better to answer this. But, you know, often people will say, if I didn't hear as well, I wouldn't have these problems. Now, this doesn't speak directly to hearing aids, but just, you know, in terms of this sort of normal thought that, you know, people with misophonia will have, you know, that if I don't hear as well, things will be better. Unfortunately, if you're hearing, often there's something called recruitment, where if your hearing is at all impaired, you know, your brain processes overcompensate. So you know, you don't really know which way it's going to go. And there are modifications that can be made by an audiologist to the hearing aids that might be helpful to this particular gentleman, and I can give you that information afterwards.
The term misophonia means hatred of sound, and it refers to an under-recognized, under-researched medical disorder which was first identified by audiologists in 2000. We're talking about misophonia on The Morning Show. Psychologist Jennifer Jo Brount has been studying it for nearly two decades. She established a research program at Duke University a decade ago. Getting your questions, your stories, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you think you have a clinically severe reaction to certain sounds? What are the sounds that trigger distress or cause you to become angry? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get right back to this conversation in just a moment on the Ideas Network. People who suffer from misophonia may become aggressive when they are unable to avoid their trigger sound, which may lead to disruptions in their social life or their family life. It can also hamper your ability to concentrate in class or on the job when it is common to hear sounds of a pen clicking or perhaps chalk running against a blackboard. We're exploring misophonia here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Jennifer Jo Brout stays with us. She is a school psychologist and counselor. She's been studying misophonia for nearly two decades. Gathering your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. Let's go back to the phones now with Barbara joining us from Cary. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. This is so interesting because I'm like a lot of other people who didn't know there was a word for it. And I remember the first time I was aware of it was in grade school. I was sitting right in front of the teacher's desk, first day of class, and she never swallowed. And I was just jumping out of my skin. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't listen. I nearly failed the class. I got warnings until they changed my seat, and I sat in the back for whatever reason. And I did better, but I wanted to just escape. I couldn't stand it. To this day, if somebody's speaking and their mouth is full of saliva, if I can, I tell them to swallow, but if I can't, I just have to get out. But I also have a flip side to it. I have sounds that put me in a state of euphoria. It's like sounds that just relax me. Here's to the point. I was on a bus in the city, and there were some people in front of me cracking gum. Sound most people don't like, but I love it. And I didn't want to get off at my stop because I just wanted to keep listening to it.
Fascinating. Barbara, thank you so much for sharing that. Jennifer, go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, it is not that people with misophonia hate all sounds. There are just these clusters of sounds and sometimes a little more idiosyncratic, like for this woman, gum chewing or gum cracking is a pleasant sound. For most people with misophonia, it is not. But, you know, most people with most misophonia do like certain sounds. I mean, you know, it's just on a spectrum, you know, of pleasant to severely unpleasant or very pleasant to severely unpleasant.
Barbara, thanks so much. Let's go to Tom now in Kohler. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter, who's now 19, was diagnosed with misophonia roughly about 6 years ago. And she was diagnosed after I noticed that she wasn't interacting with me the way she was interacting with her mother. And I was concerned that, you know, we were becoming more distant. And it led to, a little family discussion that I did some things like throat clearing that just really set her on edge. And instead of being hostile towards me, she just avoided me. And we went to counseling, and we're working through some issues. She has earbuds, but right now she's a student at the University of Madison, and the obstacles that she is trying to overcome is that a lot of the classes that she takes, there's just a lot of people in it, a lot of annoying sounds, and it's distracting. So when she, asked for special help or consideration, particularly, during testing time, most of the time she's given that, but a lot of times some of the professors just think, this can't possibly be, a real...
A real issue. Yeah. Tom, thank you so much. Jennifer, what are some coping strategies, whether it is working with schools or whether it be in the workplace setting?
Well, for somebody who's in college, there are earbuds and even earphones that audiologists who specialize in this can provide that emanate white noise, which then cancels out certain frequencies, and that may be of help to somebody in college because they can kind of modulate the sounds in the classroom versus how loud they can turn it up and still hear the teacher. It's not easy, but it helps, particularly if you're an older person. If you're a young child, I find they have a lot of difficulty mediating, the headphones or the earbuds. But that is something that is available.
Tom, thanks so much for the call. Kayla in Fox Lake emailed and has been dealing with misophonia since a very young age. Kayla says, now that I'm in the workforce, certain noises during work meetings make me panic and want to leave, specifically the sound of people picking at their skin, around their fingernails. Around my family and friends, I feel comfortable asking them to stop, but that doesn't really pan out in the workplace in a meeting to tell someone to stop making a noise. How can people deal with this in the workforce?
Well, it's very difficult, and if you might notice that almost all of the sounds everyone has been speaking about are repetitive in nature. They're not necessarily loud or soft, they're repetitive. And one of the reasons for that is there's something called auditory gating. So you can sort of see it if you're looking at a dog, for example. And, if a dog hears a sound that is unknown to him or her, you'll see the ears prick up, so that's alerting. So we always do that to sound. Now, what's supposed to happen, and we get a nervous system arousal just in case that sound is something we need to be concerned with. Now, what happens with people with misophonia is that whereas a typical person would, as they hear that sound over and over, put it in the background and also stop responding to it. And again, these are very preconscious, subconscious processes that go on in the brain without your awareness. What seems to be happening in misophonia is that we are continuing to respond to each repetition of the sound as if it's highly alerting and as if it's dangerous or toxic or harmful. So getting away from the sound, again, brings you back to a normal state.
Let's bring in Joseph now in Madison. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hi. So I don't know if this is misophonia. I have a feeling it might be, but basically when people make statements or as part of a conversation inflect upwards at the end of a sentence, so for example, it would be like, I went to the dog park and my dog was running around and like that sort of thing, as opposed to a question like, did you go to the dog park? So they have the same inflection of like a higher frequency tone at the end of the sentence, but they shouldn't necessarily. It's as if they're asking a question when they're not.
That's really interesting, Joseph. Thanks for bringing that to the table. Jennifer.
Is that misophonia? Question mark. I don't know. You know, it depends how eventually misophonia is defined. It sounds like it could be a pitch issue, and there are audiologists at the Niemers Hospital in Delaware and New Jersey who are studying the pitch element. It's most likely, of course, not all pitch, but we do react more to higher pitches. So for this gentleman, it could be an issue of pitch, so it could be kind of a piece of misophonia, or, again, depending how misophonia is eventually defined, it may or may not be. And it also depends how he reacts, which we didn't really go into.
Joseph, thanks so much for the call. Jennifer, you were able to kind of put together some ground rules for you and your spouse so that you could have some coping mechanisms. What are some smaller things that people can do on a daily basis to help cope with misophonia?
It's very individually based because, of course, it depends, well, what is your life? How much are you exposed to? How much downtime do you have? But I find the first thing that's helpful is education or psychoeducation, really understanding to the extent that we know how is your physiological system, your neurophysiological system responding and understanding what's happening. For many people, it's then, again, a process of unnaturally kind of unpacking what feels like a simultaneous response of either rage or fear or just overwhelmingness, and trying to stick to what the actual physiological response is and try to do things to self-regulate the system. So you have to kind of try to remove all of the, this one triggers me, that one triggers me, this is my worst trigger, but we all do it. I mean, you know, it's natural. But if you really work to kind of separate those components and concentrate almost in a very clinically cold way on it is what it is, and then you need to do what you need to do to cope. You know, if you have to leave the room and you can and sort of reset the system, that's great. Also, a lot of it, you know, misophonia varies. When you have a higher stress level, you're going to have worse misophonia because your system is already revved up. If you have a lack of sleep or a virus or a cold, you know. So, you know, self-care in general is important, though sometimes more difficult for people with misophonia because your nervous system is being taxed. So depending on the individual, and then, of course, the headphones, the sound maskers, can be helpful to some people.
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Jo Brout is a licensed counselor and school psychologist. She's been researching misophonia for nearly two decades in collaboration with the International Misophonia Research Network and the Star Institute for Sensory Processing Disorder. This hour of the morning show was produced by Niaja Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we will discover ways to teach your children financial responsibility during On Your Money. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening.